Part of the mission of our laboratory then is to improve control strategies for wind erosion, and I'm going to talk about, as he said, control with tillage ridges. So today I'd like to overview briefly the primary ridge design parameters that we have to work with, talk a little bit about the quantifying these effects of the parameter choices that we make, and finally suggest some best management practices to improve our control with wind erosion, control with ridges. Part of the motivation for this work is simply that last spring we had a lot of failures, I think, in Texas of ridge controls, and eventually on one spring day it closed down the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, and so that's a pretty impressive result. This is my poster child then for ridges, and you see these are typical tillage ridges, and I'm going to talk mainly about those that have some clod armor on the right side of this picture initially. These are the tillage parameters then we have some control over, and you see direction, length, height, spacing. Those are the good news things that we have some control over. Others we have less control over when we build tillage ridges, but they're all important parameters of tillage ridges. An old idea then is that we are concerned about the wind direction when we talk about ridges, and the A direction then, and we want the ridges parallel or normal to the maximum erosive winds. So in this picture it would be the A direction, and we divide that by the B direction then, and we say, oh, that's the preponderance. How we interpret preponderance then is probably not always clear, but here's one possible interpretation at least, and that is when we have a preponderance near one, over here you can see we don't have a preference for any wind direction, and in fact the control effectiveness of a ridge is probably 50% of what it would be if it was just a normal wind normal to the ridge. As preponderance goes up, we get better control with the ridges, but if our ridges are parallel rather than normal to the wind direction, preponderance becomes our enemy. And then one of the other things I've plotted on here is the probable control you get with furrow dikes. That effectively gives us always a high preponderance situation, and I think we probably, when we have problems, we probably undersell furrow dikes a bit at this point. This is an example of a furrow dike system, and in this case probably not too effective because the furrow dikes have a sand top rather than a clod top on them. One of the other management practices that we ought to think about, I think, is decreasing the field length. I think you can see with the sand between these ridges, winds parallel to these ridges are going to destroy the ridge clod cover pretty quickly, and I've seen very good ridges with armored crusts on them destroyed simply by the sand going down the furrows with parallel winds. Ways we can get around that is instead of these long ridges. In the second picture, then we can see putting the ridges at an angle, and that will effectively shorten our field length down the field. We can use the WEPS model then to assess those effects quite readily in that situation. And also in the next one I'll suggest here, we can use the WEPS model to calculate how much saltation creep will come down those furrows, and into, if we put some kinks in the furrows, we'll have a trap region then that we can effectively shorten our field length. Another consideration here then is trying to take a look at the airflow near tillage ridges. And you can see that we have a total drag, and then we divide that total drag into a form drag and a shear stress. And as we think, it's the shearing stress then that typically moves the soil. So what can we do about our modifying the airflow? Well, we have a couple of things we can work with is the height of the ridge and the spacing of the ridges. And one of the things we've done then is to measure, well, we know in the furrow the loose material will have an effective threshold velocity of about 0.3 meters per second. And so we've measured the friction velocity or threshold friction velocity then above the ridges and said, what's that number? And then tried to compare, use that the ratio of those two numbers to see how effective our ridges changing the ridge form might be. And this is just some smooth curves from our data that we've calculated. And you see as you get to a high spacing of about 1 to 4, we get more effective ridge effects here. And the second thing, that one that people don't think about quite often is here as we get to a higher ridge, also with a 1 to 4 ridge, we get a better shielding of that furrow area. In another dimensionless plot then of this kind of an effect, you can see that as we have large ridges here, the threshold is higher, and this is a relative threshold now to the maximum, to the threshold for the biggest ridges. As we decrease the scale of our ridges, our threshold goes down where we begin erosion, and also we lower the storage capacity that we have. So in two counts here then, big ridges seem better than small ridges. Another point with larger ridges is we want that sand grain, the streamlines are compressed here, and that sand grain when it comes over the ridge is really moving, and so we want it to fall into this region of a recirculation zone. We don't want it to strike over here in the high stress region where we're trying to keep the armor on the ridge. The last question I've asked of the ridges, some of them fail, and the question is why? Well, when the winds are normal to the ridge, it means we've got too much erodible material, and the question is, how much erodible material is too much to let this ridge do self-armoring? And so we've looked at that question a bit and calculated the amount of soil that you lose from the top of the ridge and the storage ability you have in the bottom of the ridge then. And we've used a shearing stress distribution, or in this case is a friction velocity distribution from a paper by Han and Sykes, where they've simulated the threshold or the friction velocities over fairly steep, smooth ridges. And I've used that in the following calculations then to calculate how much soil could be removed with a given distribution of friction velocities over the surface. And you see here, if we start out with, say, a cloddy surface with 60% erodible, we are below the storage capacity then of the ridges. But as we get up to about 80% with a small ridge of 100 millimeters, all of a sudden we exceed the capacity to store the soil, and this ridge is going to be into failure system. When we get a bigger scale ridge, we can probably tolerate a little more erodible fraction in the soil surface before we reach failure. One of the works in our lab in tillage boxes was done some time ago, but they found that if we compacted the soil ahead of the tillage operation, we could lower maybe by 10 to 15% the erodible fraction in the soil. And that, you see from a diagram like this, could be a great help in getting your ridges armored. Another idea is to try to create water repellent clods, and this came out of another study that I did. But the top surface here represents a smooth, flat surface, and this is the coefficient of abrasion of the clods then over several months. And you see a seasonal effect was large, but the top line represents a smooth, flat surface where the clods got well soaked up with water and and we're subject to the freeze-thaw. The bottom line then represents the clods on the top of the ridge that were pretty water repellent and in fact resisted breakdown quite well. Now this wasn't a practical case because these clods were contaminated with 3 to 4% oil and grease. That's what made them water repellent. But the idea is, if you could find a practical way to do this, you would have something that would be very useful in keeping ridges from failing. Well, when ridges do fail then, we only have the opportunity to find some way to stabilize them. And we've been working some on that problem too. 2 minutes? Okay. This is a set of micro plots we've had out in the last couple of years. The initial year we used a lot of treatments that involved some manure, and that was fairly effective. And this last year we used some other treatments, and some of these treatments involved a straw cover, fly ash, and lime cover that kind of formed a crust, and some commercial stabilizers, and some other treatments on these. And we were catching the runoff and hopefully the little bit of wind erosion in these troughs to compare the ability of these things to withstand conditions over winter and their weather properties. Summarizing then the results of this was our control, and you see some of these, the fly ash and lime cover, were pretty effective. Adding PAM to that didn't do much for us, and other PAM treatments we haven't had success, but we're going to try some PAM again later, I think, with different molecular rates. And the straw cover was pretty effective. The one I thought was surprising was the soil tack, which was a stabilizer. It should have worked, and maybe we need to redo that to see if we can't make a better combination of things that we did on it. Summary there. We have a number of things we can try for best management practices on the armored ridges. We can be sure we get the orientation correct. We can try to shorten the field lengths, and I think this is one we overlook quite often, particularly when we got low preponderance in an area. And again, Furodex is one we could sell more, I think. The 1-4 ridge height spacing is what we've always kind of recommended, and that seems quite adequate. But we've sometimes said that 20 centimeter ridges were somehow optimum. Everything I've done in measurement and in analysis suggests to me that when you've got problems, bigger ridges are going to be better than the 20 centimeter ones. And we can also look at things like soil compaction and increasing the water repellency. And finally, if you don't have stable ridges, we need to search for ways that we can armor those ridges with some other materials. And thank you.